This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Good morning and welcome to K4HD Radio. This is the You're Living Grand.live show. My name is Ben Baker. This show is all about how you communicate value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Over the next 50 minutes, we will explore different ways to help you demonstrate your uniqueness and ask our guest, what's your story? Welcome to the show. Good morning, everybody. It is Ben Baker coming to you live from K4HD Radio on the You're Living Grand.live show. It's 10 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast on June 26th. Welcome to the show. We're in for another great hour. I want to thank you all for coming today. I want to thank you all for being here. Make sure you leave your questions, and my guest and I will do our best to answer them. I want to shout out to Rebel, you know, as always, my wonderful sound engineer. She takes care of me each and every week. And I want to shout out to Paul Kirsch. He's going to be joining us in a few minutes. Paul's got a company called Cellience, and what they do is they do sales engineering through social media, and we're going to have a really good conversation about that. But before I get into that, let's have a conversation, because yesterday I was having coffee with a guy, and we were talking about scaling businesses. You know, and we were talking about, is it absolutely necessary for every single business to scale? And this morning I decided, let's have fun. Let's look on Google. And I said, how to scale a business? And 1.8 billion, and I'm talking B with a billion, articles came up in less than half a second. It's something that everybody's talking about. It's about something everybody, you know, sits there and goes, how do I scale my business? How do I get to the next level? How do I grow this thing to a point where I can sell it to Google or Amazon or whatever and make my $150 million and walk away? But the question is, how many businesses actually do it? And is there millions and millions of frustrated business owners out there who think that they have to scale their business because everybody else is scaling their business? And instead of being proud of what they have, and instead of enjoying the business they have, enjoying their customers, enjoying what they do, and being proud of what they do, they have this overwhelming sense that they have to take their business to the next level, that they have to grow from 5 to 25 to 50 to 100 to 1,000 employees, from, you know, half a million to a million to 10 million to 50 million to 100 million to $250 million in revenue. Is that realistic for most businesses? Do most business owners have the capital, the capacity, the knowledge, the drive to do this? And my answer is no. And there's nothing wrong with that. Businesses need to grow to the expectations and the goals of the principals of the company. What are your particular goals? What are the things that are important to you? What are the things that you want to do? What was the reason you got into business to begin with? You know, if you got into business to grow a business to $100 billion and be able to take that buyout from Amazon, you know what? And that's the one thing, and that's the only thing that's driving you, go for it. Absolutely go for it. And I hope that you make it. I really do. I hope that you bring on the right team, the right people. You have the right product, the right sales technique, the right funnels, the right marketing, and the right objectives in order to be able to make that the objective a reality. But for most people, that's not reality. Most people want to make a reasonable living. Most people want to take care of their kids. They want to take care of their employees. They want to make sure that their employees have a reasonable living, that they're able to take care of their families, put their kids through college, you know, make a fair product at a fair price, take care of their customers, and be able to get up in the morning and do it all over again. And what's wrong with that? What's wrong with having a business that you're proud of that is what it is? It might be $500,000. It might be $1 million. It might be $5 million. It might be $25 million. You know, that is up to you in terms of what your drive, your expectation, and what your market is. But set your goals based on your wants, your needs, your expectations, your values, and what you think that your company can actually deliver in terms of value in the marketplace. You know, why do you have to compete with everybody else? Why do we have to sit there and say, well, if they're doing it, we have to do it? You know, it's like the old adage in, you know, in the supermarket business. Well, they ran a coupon, we have to run a coupon. They ran an ad, we have to run an ad. You know, you're always sitting there chasing somebody else. And if you spend your entire life chasing somebody else, you know, how can you be happy with yourself? I got a question that just came in. How has scale been around for some time now, or is it something new? Scale's not new. You know, I mean, Henry Ford scaled a business. Henry Ford took a business that was, you know, bricks and mortar and cars being built one at a time and developed an assembly line that was able to put out 100 cars, 500 cars, 1,000 cars a day. And, you know, that was his innovative process. I mean, that's where scaling really came from. It came from the Industrial Revolution and being able to mechanize and be able to sit there and say, okay, if we can make one widget, we can make 10 widgets, we can make 100 widgets, we can make 1,000 widgets. And digital has taken that to a whole new level because adding those extra customers, if you have a total digital business, is not that difficult. You know, there's not an incremental cost. The incremental costs come with servicing those clients. It's making sure that if you had 10 clients that you had to service, that's pretty easy. If you have 100 clients, it's a little bit more difficult. If you have 1,000, even more difficult. 10,000, 100,000, a million clients, it becomes more difficult to make sure that you can provide a customer experience both for your employees and also for your customers that makes them want to keep coming back. And that's the key thing about, you know, what, you know, is scaling something new? Absolutely not. The next question I have is what is known as scale, or was it called something else? You know, it was the Industrial Revolution. You know, scale, we've come to calling it scale because that's what it is. It's all about growth. It's all about taking yourself from 1x to 5x to 10x to 100x to 1,000x of what your current, you know, your dollar of volumes that you make on a yearly basis is. And that's why it's called scale. But the philosophy behind it is something that's been with us for decades. You know, is it a 10,000-year-old philosophy? Absolutely not. Is it a 1,000-year-old philosophy? Absolutely not. But with the Industrial Revolution, the ability to mechanize and automate, it allows us to get there. Now, we need to start taking, you know, we start to taking things in a perspective. The perspective is the most important thing. You know, it's not about the name. It's not about what you call it. It's not about, you know, it's about the perception behind it. You know, what do we want to do? Who do we want to serve? How do we want to serve them? You know, what do we want these people to think about us when we're not in the room? Are we somebody that just provides something that they just buy once because it's cheap and convenient, and therefore it doesn't really matter if there's any service on the back end? It's just something that they buy once, and if they need it, they'll buy it again. Or is it something that we want to have long-term relationship customers with? And if we're going to have long-term relationship with customers, scaling becomes more difficult because it's all about people. And humans are different. Each and every single human is different, and their wants and their needs and their desires and their hopes and their fears are different. And we need to be able to manage those. And as we grow as companies, we need to sit there and say, are these people important to us? Who are the people that are really important to us, and how do we take care of them, and how do we build the systems and the processes and the procedures in place to be able to take care of people? And some companies do it better than others. You know, some companies, as they grow, they build the customer experience teams to be able to manage the extra workload and the extra people and the extra, you know, needs within the company. But a lot of companies ignore it. They just sit there and say, well, we're growing so fast, We don't care if we lose people around the back end. If people fall off, if people quit, if people stop dealing with us on the back end, we don't really care because we're getting so many more people on the front end. Well, that's great. But the problem is your client acquisition cost, what it costs you to bring in a new customer, is always more expensive than it is servicing the old customer. So we need to think that way. We need to think about how can we take care of our business and take care of our people and what is important to us. You know, is, you know, are the people that buy from us, are the people that work for us, are they the most critical things in our business, or is it the money? You know, is it the growth? And there are two very different philosophies. And I'm not saying one's right. I'm not saying what's wrong. I'm saying you as a business owner need to decide what is the most important thing for you. If your goal is to build a company, to grow a company to a point where you can sell it and then go live in the Bahamas, you know what? That's your decision. And I hope you'll be able to make it. But if you're looking to build something long-term and keep, you know, customers happy and keep, you know, employees with you, you need to think about companies in a completely different way. You need to think about scale in a very completely different way and be able to have those things in mind as you're building the business. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to bring Paul on board, and he and I are going to have a conversation about, you know, just because you build it, will they come? We'll be right back.
This is Ben Baker of the Your Living Brand Live Show on K4HD Radio. We'll be right back.
The Your Living Brand Show is brought to you by Your Brand Marketing. Did you know that the world views your brand not as you desire, but as it relates to them? That's why you need to communicate your brand. Tell a story. Win loyalty. Your Brand Marketing helps you reach that goal. It's time to stop being a commodity and instead be a brand worth loving. It's time to contact Your Brand Marketing. Please visit www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download a free chapter of the book on personal branding. That's www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download your free copy now.
Welcome back to K4HD Radio. This is Ben Baker, and this is the Your Living Brand Live Show.
And we're back. You know, before I bring Paul on board, I just want to answer one thing. It's somebody left a message that said, it says, many things are called by new names, even though they're different ways of doing things in a new way. You know what? The name doesn't matter as much as the perception behind it. What do we call something is not as important as how it's perceived and how it's understood. You know, if calling something by a new name doesn't make it different. If you call something by a new name, the question is, how do people perceive that new name? Does it have a different intonation? Does it give a different perception to people? And you only change a name, i.e. a brand, i.e. a thought process, when you're trying to change the conversation. And if you're trying to change the conversation, change the way people look and feel about a certain item, you might change the name. But the question is, it's not what you think, it's what your customers think. So with that, let's bring Paul on board. Paul and I, you know, I just saw Paul down in Dallas, what was it, about 2 weeks ago. You know, Paul, are you there?
I am. Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Hey, how are you? What was it, about 2 weeks ago I saw you down in Dallas?
Yes, sir.
Now, we had a great lunch at the airport. I was on my way to Houston, and I had the chance of either taking a direct flight to Houston or taking a three-hour layover in Dallas. And I went, you know what? If I do that, I'm going to get to see Paul. And he and I had been, you know, connecting off and on through LinkedIn, and we've had some great conversations offline. And I went, you know what? For a three-hour layover, it was great. I stopped at the airport. There's a hotel right at the airport. I walked out of my gate, walked through security, up the escalator, and there he was, and we had a great lunch together. So it was nice to actually break bread with you. So welcome to the show, Paul.
Hey, thank you. And had you not made that layover, we would have missed out on that amazing burger. So
that's true. And the service was as good as the burgers.
It was great.
Yeah, we had this phenomenal waitress, and you know, she took care of us, and she was personable, and she was attentive, and she was polite, and she was funny. And I think that made our time together as much fun as anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing. And I think that's a great point, Ben. I mean, the people around us sometimes can have such an impact on, our mood and how we interact. I tell my daughter all the time, you know, if she's having a bad day, I say, look, you need to be the light in the room, not the darkness. And you know, I think so often we forget the impact we have on other people's lives.
Absolutely. And I think it's her fault we bought dessert. You know, because we were having such a good time. We said, all right, let's have some coffee and dessert. Why not? So they got an upsell. You know, we got some more time together and we had some more laughs. So that was great.
Absolutely. But
I wanted to talk to you because I love your business. First of all, I love the name of the company, Cellius. It's a great name. And, you know, I'll put the link to the website, and he's got some great images on the homepage. So everybody should go to the website and check out the front page images, because there's a couple there that I think are absolutely hysterical. But I want to talk to you about, let's start off by saying, what brought you to Cellius? What was the impetus to start the company? Tell me a little bit about it, and tell me what's the value that you guys add to others?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to tell a quick background story, and I'll try and I'm going to have to skip over stuff to the essence of time, but I spent about 26 years working in the marketing research industry. I worked for companies like Gallup and Harris Interactive. And I started my career off in an operations role before moving into sales. And my sales career, I had a lot of success in outside sales. Eventually, I moved into a sales leadership role. And I was part of a company that was acquired by a firm overseas. They micromanaged the death out of us. And I was working with my ex-wife at the time, and she was pregnant with our first son, and we went from loving Monday mornings to hating Monday mornings and under the new leadership. And so I decided to negotiate out of my contract and move on. I figured I was in a sales role. I could find a job easier. So I kept getting job offers and kept turning them down. And one time she says, you either need to start this company you've been talking about, or you need to take one of these jobs. And so, you know, I always say that she put her size 6 shoe in the back side of my pants and pushed me off the ledge. And so immediately.
Great motivation.
Yeah. Immediately, I was kind of scrambling. Okay, what am I going to do? Well, I'd been in sales leadership and had done, I think, a very good job of building teams and coaching. And so I thought, okay, I'll just really start taking on some coaching engagements. And so out of the gate, I was doing sales coaching and consulting. Ironically enough, the more engagements I took on, the more the conversation kept leading back to marketing, saying, hey, can you help with marketing too? What you're doing is great, but can you help with our website? Can you help with this? And I had some experience in web development, so I took on a couple of projects where I actually built out the websites. I'm like, I don't want to be doing this. I don't have time to be doing this. And so I built a team to help support me. And so we started doing some web development work and some other marketing support. And eventually the company morphed more towards marketing and became a digital marketing agency called Websites and Leads. And the reason I'm telling this background story. Thank you. My background was always in sales. And Websites and Leads, we were doing a great job building nice websites and doing SEO, driving leads. But I noticed my clients weren't necessarily growing their businesses. They weren't unhappy with us. They were often got great feedback, and it was all nice, but I wasn't seeing the needle moving. And I started to see that there's a real flaw, at least today, with the competitive nature of digital marketing. A lot of people out there wearing web development hats. The model of just building a website and driving some leads to it doesn't necessarily help you grow your business.
Yeah.
Because you might not be getting the right leads. And quite frankly, a lot of clients don't know how to take and convert those. They don't have a process in place. So we decided to make a major shift, and we call ourselves digital sales engineers because we've taken digital marketing and turned it upside on its head and really kind of looked at, okay, what's missing in most digital marketing processes? There's companies out there that do what's called conversion rate optimization, which is where they'll analyze a site and make determinations on where people are landing and help drive conversions on those leads that are coming in. So we said, okay, we definitely want to leverage CRO. SEO is obviously an important tool. Pay-per-click ads, you know, paid search ads through Google and Facebook. We said these are definitely elements that we have to have as part of this model. And so we started to build out this model around technology. But what was missing was the content. Right. Content is king. Distribution is the queen. And, you know, without those two pieces, you really don't have a chance to build much of an empire. So we really focused on creating a brand, which is we still use digital marketing tools and technology. We, you know, we can build websites, mobile apps, but we wanted it all under one roof where we can actually build a team that can manage all these aspects, but focus on not just getting people to your site, but helping you convert those leads into sales. And that's why we came up with the name of Sellance, because we wanted something that really represented moving the needle forward.
Well, it's not about driving people to people's sites. I mean, driving people to your site is important. If they don't have awareness of who you are and what you do, they're never going to come. But the trick is, what do you do with them once you get them to the site? How do you get them to spend more than 3.8 seconds, which I think is the average amount of time that people, you know, visit a homepage? You know, either they like it or they don't. If they like it, fine, they're off to somewhere else. You know, if they're not, they're off to another, you know, completely different site whatsoever. But it's about understanding and saying, okay, if we're going to create content, if we're going to develop content, what content are we going to create and who is it valuable to? Because it's so important to know your audience. And I want you to talk about that.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go a little different direction.
Sure.
There's truth to what you said. However, and the stats you gave, the 3.8 seconds, is a little misleading because there are plenty of numbers out there that say it's up to 7 seconds. Other places you can go say up to 15 seconds. Whatever it is, you have a brief moment of time to capture people's attention when they come to your site. If you're giving them too much information, the content could be amazing, but you're going to lose them. And when we look at Google Analytics or other analytics and we look at high abandon rates, first thing we go is, okay, is the content attractive to the buyers? Is the content relevant to the buyers? Or are we getting the wrong people to the site? Or is the content wrong? So right. Those are pieces. But the other aspect of content creation that most people overlook is your content needs to cater to the search engines as much as it does to your buyers. So there's what we call human-based content, where it's really focused on trying to attract, you know, Ben Baker to my site because I'm writing an article on how to manage a better podcast around branding. And so maybe you're attracted to that. You come to my site and check it out. But the search engines, it's more important often that we're driving leads by using things like Medium.com and other tools where the search engines are actually looking at your content from an SEO perspective. Now, it still has to be good content, still has to be relevant, and hopefully still attractive to readers, but it doesn't necessarily have to perfectly match your brand. In fact, one of the strategies that can really work well is, I'll give a great example. I know somebody who writes articles on her personal hobbies, hiking and biking.
Right.
She's in a business around building virtual assistant. She contracts out virtual assistants. There's a major disconnect between her blog and her audience. But the reason it works is because the search engines see that people are coming to read her blog and they're staying on her site for a period of time. So the search engines go, okay, so this content must be relevant and good. She's still using relevant keywords related to her business and she's still finding ways to tie that content back to her business. But at the end of the day, the search engines see that she's getting people to read her content and stay on the site. And they say, okay, guess what? This must be good content. This must be a good site. We're going to move her up the rankings in the search engines for the keywords she's writing on because it's relevant. Now, the content she's writing is not something that is directly attracting her ultimate buyers.
Right.
But it's using a process that actually the search engines go, okay, we can actually send you the right buyers because the organic traffic she's getting now because she's in the top of the search engines on those keywords is her right buyers. So my point here is the content you write doesn't always have to be catered to your buying audience, but it should be relevant to your brand. It should be something that's representative of what you're trying to do.
Right. So it's a matter of understanding the search engine optimization game. Like what are the keywords that people are looking for? And what are the keywords that are driving people towards sites? So you're right. It's got to be on brand. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be relevant. But it also has to be things that the algorithms, you know, the almighty algorithms, no matter who they are going to sit there and say, oh, wait a second here. They're talking about stuff that everybody else is looking for. Maybe we should bump them up in the rankings.
That's right.
Interesting. Interesting. I just had a question that came in. It says something about just because somebody knows how to put things onto their website, it doesn't make them a web developer. And they want you to talk about that.
Yeah, well, and I think that's an interesting question. Let's step back from that. There's web developers and web designers. Those are not necessarily the same people.
Very different.
Yeah, often you're hiring somebody who says, hey, I can build your website. But are they truly a designer? Do they understand? There's two factors that really make up a successful site in terms of how it engages and how it attracts people and, quite frankly, how it becomes usable. And that's UI, UX. And UI is user interface. So that's your website, your navigation, and things like that. And then user experience is the UX. If the experience of a user is not a positive one, no matter how great your content is, if your navigation is ineffective, if they have a hard time finding your information, you have too much content on your homepage, you're going to alienate people. So UI UX is what really drives this successful discussion about an effective website. Putting content on your site does not make you a web developer or a designer. In fact, there's so many DIY products out there. Wix.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, Wix and WordPress and all these different tools. You can make beautiful, beautiful sites that do not convert. You can make ugly, boring-looking sites that have great content, and they've got the right kind of hooks, and they will attract people in. In droves, it comes down to how you're attracting people. And like you said in the beginning, whether it's 3.8 seconds, 7 seconds, 15 seconds, what matters most is that you're giving people a reason to stay on your site and learn more. So that's why headlines matter. Hooks, such as a really enticing message. If you're using slider images, which are these images that kind of rotate in a carousel or they might move, that's great. However, it's like the idea of a newspaper, top of the fold was the area of the newspaper, which was really prominent. It was the area people saw first. On a website, we still refer to it as top of the fold, where it's that area that fills the page of your website when people come to it. That's where you really want to attract their attention. If they have to scroll down to learn who you are, you're probably going to lose them. So you need to be able to leverage that information quickly. So, yes, being able to add content to a website does not make you a web designer or a web developer. It makes you somebody who has gone through a tutorial and learned how to use a tool. But knowing how to really focus on the user interface and the user experience and make those two things work together, that's where you really come up with what we call CX, which is customer experience. And that's
right. A
big part of what we focus on is CXO, which is customer experience optimization.
Well, it's making it easy for your customers. I mean, it, you know, to your point that we just talked about is the fact that I have a web development team that works with me, and they actually have somebody that does the back end of the website and somebody who does the actual graphics itself and somebody who does the customer experience and somebody who does the user experience. And it works really well because the two people are working hand in hand. They each have their own skills. One is a back-end coder. One is actually a more graphic, you know, based person. And by putting those two skill sets together, you have a better option. You know, it doesn't mean that I don't go into the back end of my website and make small changes every once in a while. I may change a picture. I may upload a new video. I may do that. But that certainly doesn't make me a web developer. That makes me somebody that goes in there and causes my web development team grief because I changed something and it causes reflow. You know, so you know, it's a matter of being able to understand what are you trying to do with your website? You know, yeah. what is the objective of a website? And not every website is objective the same. I mean, you were talking about ugly websites. Amazon is one of the ugliest websites I've ever seen in my life. But you know what? It works. You know, it does exactly what it wants to do. It's the job of the Amazon website is to keep you on the Amazon website and keep you buying and create an experience makes you want to say, oh, wait a second. Oh, I saw this. Well, I bought this. Oh, maybe I should buy this as well. And it keeps on making suggestions of where you should go. It takes you further and further down the rabbit hole. You know, it's like the middle aisle in Costco where you walk through it and all of a sudden five things end up in your cart that you weren't expecting to. It wasn't laid out the prettiest way in the world, but it's right there in front of you in a way that makes it easy for you to be able to sit there and go, oh, maybe I should take that.
And that's a great example of where the user experience outweighs the user interface by far. And Amazon's an interesting brand in the regards that, you know, they bought up multiple companies. They own a comic book distribution company called Comixology. And you go to Comixology.com. It is the same exact format and look and feel as Amazon, maybe some different pictures. But the experience of all their properties is the same because they've proven time and time again that they make it easy for buyers to actually buy.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody from the audience says it seems to be working for them. Absolutely, it's working for them. Excuse me.
It's an old phrase and it's sometimes maybe a little overused, but I refer to a lot of the DIY products out there, DIY sites, as lipstick on a pig because mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily create the results you want. It just looks pretty and flashy, but that's not necessarily what's going to attract people in and keep them there.
Well, and let's get into that a little bit more because that's really important because the word that you're coming up with in my mind is strategy. You know, it's all about the strategy. What are you really trying to do? You know, who are your customers? What do you want from them? What do you want them to do when you get them to the website? You know, what are the things you want them to learn? What are the things you want them to activate on? And be able to build a website that does those things. It's not about a pretty website. You know, there's lots and lots of ugly websites out there that really have great conversion. And there's lots of pretty websites that people walk in and go, oh, and they walk away. So when you're working with your customers, what's the conversation that you guys are having immediately about strategy?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing I always ask is, what's your goal? What's your objective? You know, you'd think every business owner's objective is to get more leads and more sales from their website. However, there's plenty of companies out there that are just inundated with business. For them, it's more about top of mind awareness. It's more of a branding tool. Mm-hmm. It's more about a credibility piece. So they may not necessarily be as focused on leads. So if I go into them and say, hey, I can bring you more leads, they're going to be like, well, right now we can't handle what we got. We don't have enough people. So,
That's good. They know their business.
Absolutely. So it's important to know what the real objective is first. But I always really step back to the old KISS method, keep it simple, stupid. You know, that model is so important when it comes to how you approach things online. I'll give the example that I said content is important. Hopefully we'll have a chance to touch on that a little bit. If you're writing articles or doing a video, I used to use the kitchen sink method like a lot of people when I wrote my articles. I'd have these, you know, 10 to 12 page articles that I was very proud of that gave so much information. And what I always heard from people is like, wow, that was great. You gave me so much, but I don't know where to start. And I think that when we give too much information, we're often scaring people away and making it hard for them to know, how do I even begin? It's overwhelming. I was thinking about this 2 days ago. I was talking to somebody about an information product I bought, It was a video production information product that I was super excited to buy. And when I got it, they gave me so much information and so many bonus pieces and so many software tools that they were, you know, that was part of what drew me in. I was like, oh, I get all this for this price? That's amazing. And once I got it, I just found myself overwhelmed. I didn't even want to dive into it because I didn't know where to begin. And I think our websites, we often feel like the kitchen sink method is best, whereas I've really come to realize it goes back to the philosophy of be very clear with what you're trying to get across. Make sure your message is clear. Leverage simple hooks. When I say hooks, I mean like a creative headline or something, a tag that's really making it clear what people are going to learn about you. You know, it's about them knowing who you are, who you serve, and how you serve them. And going back to what you said originally, and they need to be able to determine all that within a matter of seconds, or they will leave your site. And chances are, they're going to go to your competitor who probably has figured out a better way of presenting that information. Buyers get frustrated very quickly online. I worked in the marketing research industry for 26 years, and I first started off as a telephone interviewer where I would call and do surveys with people at home. I could keep people on the phone that were really frustrated, didn't want to stay on the phone, and I could get them through the surveys. I started focusing on online marketing research at the beginning of 2000, and self-administered surveys where people go through them on their own, they can quit anytime they want and nobody's there to entice them to keep going.
True.
With our websites, with our articles, our videos, they can click away at any time. So give them a reason to want to learn more. And you don't have to put it all on the homepage. You don't have to give them these huge paragraphs and chapters of information. Give them the opportunity to choose what they want to learn about. Put that stuff deeper in the site. Give them a reason to want to dive in more. And that's where you have an opportunity to really establish a relationship. But getting someone to your site one time, how useful really is that? Am I going to buy if I come to, let's say, benbaker.com? If I go to your website and let's say you have an ebook on there or something like that, am I going to buy that immediately? Maybe, maybe not, but chances are I'm going to go away, and then hopefully there's a reason for me to come back to your site again, or maybe I see an ad that you're running, and it goes, oh, yeah, Ben Baker. It takes multiple impressions in any form of marketing to get somebody to convert to a buyer. So when people tell me, well, I don't have time to build a blog. I don't have time to create video content. I don't have time to create white papers or case studies or opt-in tools. Well, then you're getting some of your site one time and expecting them to buy. That's unlikely.
Yeah. The stats say that today, people, by the time they pick up a phone and call you, are 70% the way through the buying process. They've already gone through your website. They've already gone through your social media. They've read articles on you online. They might have looked at YouTube. You know, they've talked to their friends about it before they actually ever pick up a phone and talk to you. So by the time they're ready to have that conversation and actually get into the true buying process, they've already researched you. They've already stalked you for days or weeks, if not months. You know, so it's important that the material that you're able to provide them gives them that ability to dig deeper. You know, right? It says, I look at my website in three ways. Is that it's, by the time they get to the third level of my website, that's where the meat and potatoes are. You know, that's where the really, you know, deep dive, interesting stuff is that you have to, you know, that if you're really interested, you'll find. The homepage is all about, am I interested in you or am I not interested in you? And that's interesting. But I really want to get into, because you want to talk about it, is content. What are the things that you see that are great content? What are the things that you see that are bad content? And how? What are the things people should be thinking about when they're developing content to make sure that it's going to be content that converts?
Okay, so there's what's called short-form content and long-form content. Short-form content, well, there's also micro-content. So micro-content would be maybe a 30-second to one-minute video. Short-form content might be, you know, a video that's under 8 minutes. But long-form content might be a video that's, you know, 30 minutes, a recording of somebody's interview or somebody's webinar. The longer the content, whether it's written, an article, a blog post, whatever, or a video or audio, the longer it is, the less likely people are going to tune all the way through. Now, I put out a video on LinkedIn about a year ago that was 3 minutes in length, 3 minutes and 50 seconds in length, which was, it dove in pretty deep on a subject, and it was entertaining. And the feedback I got was, wow, this was awesome. I stayed glued all the way to the end. And I was kind of upset at first.
Wow.
I'm like, it's 3 minutes and 50 seconds, and you can't sit through that. But it made me realize that, man, the world has changed. We are inundating people with so much information, so much content, that the longer the content, the more likely they are to tune out or click away. They think, oh, I've got enough information. You know, I got it. I got the gist of it. And they'll move on to something else. So we need to be focusing on content that entertains and informs. And if you can do that in a 30-second or 1 minute video and you get your message across, you're going to get higher engagement. Now, over time, if that's all you're doing, if all you're putting out is 1 minute videos, do you get to the point where people start to question your abilities, your knowledge? Does this person have enough information to go beyond this 1 minute content? So there's a fine line where it can work against you, but over time, shorter content is going to build a very quick following. It's going to build a loyal following, especially if it's entertaining and informative.
Right.
So when it comes to content for me, the one thing I focus on right now is single point of focus. I used to, like I said, use the kitchen sink philosophy, and I wanted to impress people with how much I knew. But what I learned over time is that doesn't work. People need to be able to take one idea and run with it. So if your content is focused on a single point of focus and it engages, informs, and educates, it's something that can really make a big impact.
Right. So when you're talking to your clients, and this is a questions came up, and we'll do this fairly quickly because we're running out of time. You know, have you ever been to a point where you're having a conversation with the client and they start talking about their goals and their objectives, and you sit there and say, wait a second here, we really should be doing this instead of that. You know, and how do you breach that conversation pretty quickly?
And this is not meant to be a contrite or abrasive response, but quite frankly, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't do that. And it doesn't mean I go in with the goal of changing someone's mind. But part of what makes me valuable and makes my team valuable over a lot of other digital marketing people that might, you know, wear that web developer hat is consultation. You know, my goal is to actually help you grow your business and help you either grow your business if that's what your needs are, or give you that brand credibility. And those things don't happen if your thought process is going one direction and I don't bother stepping in. I can't be successful with you if you work with me as a client if I don't do my job, and my job is to honestly help you down the right path. You might be on the right path, but a lot of my clients are really thinking they need one thing and they need another. I mean, I've had people come to me and say, I need a new website. And I'll look at their site. They don't need a new site. They need a different approach to their marketing.
Mm-hmm. A refocus versus a rebrand.
Absolutely.
Perfect. One last question, then I'm going to let you go, Paul. And there's a question I ask everybody. When you leave a customer site, when you get your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you and your company when you're not in the room?
I hosted a business talk show for 4 years. It was called Boss Academy Radio, and it was something I was really proud of. It started off as a live radio show before moving to a podcast. The focus of that show was to always give people the tips, tools, and tactics to grow their business. And I did that by bringing in expert guests. The one thing I will tell you that is important to me when I walk away is that people feel like they gained something that's going to help make their life better, you know, through business or personal. And that doesn't even apply just to business relationships. Hopefully, when people meet me, they walk away feeling like they gained something.
I love it. And how do people get in touch with you?
The easiest way, you can email me directly at paul@selliance.com. That's the easiest way, or you can find me out on social media, of course, which I'll give you those links and you can share out to your audience.
Absolutely. Perfect. And it's Selliance, SELLIENCE.com, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And come out to Selliance.com. There's a form on there where you can contact us, and I actually see all of those, even if I don't directly respond.
Perfect. Paul, thank you very much for being on the show. Hang out for a few minutes. We're going to go to a commercial. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to say goodbye to everybody.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Thanks for being on the show.
This is Ben Baker of the You're Living Brand.live show. On K4HD Radio, we'll be right back.
The Your Living Brand Show is brought to you by Your Brand Marketing. Did you know that the world views your brand not as you desire, but as it relates to them? That's why you need to communicate your brand. Tell a story. Win loyalty. Your Brand Marketing helps you reach that goal. It's time to stop being a commodity and instead be a brand worth loving. It's time to contact Your Brand Marketing. Please visit www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download a free chapter of the book on personal branding. That's www.powerfulpersonalbrands.com. Download your free copy now.
Welcome back to K4HD Radio. This is Ben Baker, and this is the Your Living Brand.live show.
And we're back. And before I let you go, I want to take a minute to talk about that last point that Paul and I talked about in terms of adding value to our customers. It's not always our job to say yes to our customers. Sometimes it's our job to say yes, but, or yes, however. Or have you thought of this? Or this is something you may want to consider. If all we do is say yes to our customers and we don't add any value and we just do exactly what they say, they can get that from anybody. You know, anybody will just take their order and go ahead and process it and take payment. The people that add value are the people that sit there and say, you know what, have you thought of this? You know, what do you mean by that? Why do you want to do this? What are the implications of us doing this? What are your customers thinking? What do your customers need? How do your customers perceive you? Those are the questions that we need to be asking. It doesn't matter what type of business that we're in. We need to be asking the questions to dig a little deeper and find out what is the underlying issues that our clients have. What are the things that are causing them pain and grief, and why are they walking in our door? Because truthfully, when they walk in our door, and it doesn't matter if it's a retail shop or if it's, you know, walking into phoning me on the phone to talk about a different solution that I can provide, they have a problem that they may not be able to articulate. They think they need this. But you know what? It's up to us to make sure that we're giving them something that's actually going to solve their problem. And until we can understand what the underlying issues are, what are the problems? What are the things that are keeping them up? What are the things that are making them tear their hair out? We can't add value and we can't service them properly. And that is the most important thing any business can do. And if you're a business owner, you need to live it. And you need to train your employees to be able to do it as well, because that's how businesses grow. That's how businesses get a reputation of being a solutions provider and a value-added brand, instead of just being someone that they just get the lowest price from because, you know what, I'll buy today because they're cheaper today. You never want to be the person who's cheapest. You want to be the person who adds the value. Now, I want to thank everybody for being on the show today. Thanks to everybody who asked questions. Thanks for Paul. Thanks for, you know, to Rebel for making me sound so good. Sorry that I've been coughing a little bit. I got this cough. I don't have a cold. I just got this cough that just won't go away. Next week, we have another great guest. Angus Reed is going to be with us. Angus Reed is a BC Lions Grey Cup winner. He spent 11 years in the Canadian Football League and transitioned incredibly well to business. And I want to talk to him about that transition and what it's like going from one type of lifestyle to another. So thanks a lot. Thanks for being with me today. Thanks for being such great, allowing me to have this time with you. And I'll see you next week on K4HD Radio. This is the Your Living Brand Live Show. See you next Wednesday at 10 o'clock Pacific.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. My name is Ben Baker, and my company is Your Brand Marketing. We help you to stop being a commodity and instead be a brand worth loving. If you want to communicate more effectively and build influence through trust, contact us at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. But every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, this is the Your Living Brand Live Show. Tune in next week on K4HD Radio when we ask another guest, what's your story?